This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans? Or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a psychedelic trip back to the 1960s, bright mosaic colors that dance in the light of sacred places, or conversation with a leader in the arts community. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. A group of politically active, long-haired hippies will take to the stage as the rock musical Hair opens at Le Petit Theatre this week. The first ever rock musical, Hair, made its debut in 1967. It was daring for its time, and some would say daring today, more than 40 years later. Joining me now to talk about artistic, political expression, psychedelics, and the age of Aquarius is director Troy Poplis. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hello there. How are you?
46 years have passed since Hair made its debut. Tell me, to what do you attribute its revival?
I think the revival of Hair, it's come back several years now, and things really haven't changed. The political scene, the headlines are almost the same. So I think it's current, yeah.
This is the story of a tribe of hippies opposed to the draft and the Vietnam War, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. What else is being explored in this production?
There's an exploration of friendship, love, freedom, the ability to be one's self and not actually be reprimanded or looked at poorly because of your decisions about how you freely express yourself. And I think America is back at that point when we have in the headlines again, legalization of marijuana, equality for a marriage. All of these issues are resurfacing today. So I think it's really current, and I think this revival thing for Hair is apparent that we're still living in the same time as 1967.
Do you remember where you were when you first saw it?
I was in New Orleans, in school, and probably high school at the time. And it was that thing. I remember hearing the music when it was really fresh from the fifth dimension, Aquarius and Let the Sun Shine In and all of these things, not knowing exactly what the content of the show was at the time until I could see it on stage. And it was shocking. You know, it was really shocking because then we still had all of these barriers and boundaries that we couldn't say certain things or see certain things on stage or television or radio.
For example?
I guess the first song that really poses that kind of thing is Sodomy. You know, it's just there. It's blatant. And it talks about all of these things that we hold to be taboo. And it really breaks the barriers so that there is a discussion. And I think that's the thing that we are so fearful of, the discussion. What is this all about? You know, you have people taking their pants off, you know, and not on stage, not in the theater.
Everyone who saw the original production no doubt remembers the voluntary nude scene in Hair.
Yeah. In this particular production, there will not be the nude scene, but still there are things that are given for you to think about and remember and ask questions about, little nuances you can see within the production that kind of explain how this thing all works out in theater. Yeah.
Race was another issue that was addressed back in the 60s in this production.
Definitely. You have a lot of segregation that took place, but in this hippie culture, there was no such animal. You know, it was free love. It was love everybody, accept everybody, and move on. And here we have songs once again in there that deal with the stereotypes and the names that were called to African Americans during that time in Colored Spade. He literally says the word nigger. And in their writing, they say at the end of the song, "So you say, I am a colored spade, a black nigger, a jigaboo, a jungle bunny." You know, and all of these names, the tribe exclaims, "So you say." So, yeah, it deals with all of that.
How will you help today's audiences, many who may be seeing Hair for the first time, connect with this classic rock musical?
It's engaging. The tribe goes out into the audience during these protests that take place during the show, and they incorporate people in the audience, flowers, signs, just drawing you in, getting you to dance and enjoy the move of the music from the time of the 60s. And the beat is still the same. The feel is still the same.
Tell me about the cast. I hear it's a large selection of local actors.
Yes, it's 25 local actors, different scopes on the spectrum. They're all great, talented young people, great voices, great movement. They are bringing some life to this 46-year-old piece.
And the music, there were a lot of hits that came out of Hair, some that you talked about just a moment ago. Tell me more about what we will hear and who will be performing.
Hits like Ain't Got No, which Nina Simone covered. It was a great hit of hers. It's recorded. Definitely Hair, which the Cow Sills recorded and wrote. These songs are just explosive in nature. Gets the spirit moving, the audience moving. My music director is Robert Pate, who's a local gospel recording artist. He has a band of great musicians that are electrifying. And when you come in, you can't help but want to get up on the stage with the cast and move and dance and sing.
What are you hoping folks will take away from this experience?
This love fest that takes place on the stage is not just for the stage. It's for the world. And we need to embrace one another and our differences, embrace them, keep each other close, and allow the sun to shine in. This thing about war and fighting and things like that, it happens. It will happen. It's a world. We all have different opinions. But even in our differences, we can still show love and peace and affection and embrace one another and allow ourselves to be free.
Troy, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Troy Poplis directs the rock musical Hair, running November 8th through 23rd at Le Petit Theater.
Give me a head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, streaming, flaxing, waxing. Give me down to there, shoulder length longer. Here, baby, there, mama, everywhere, daddy, daddy, hair. Grow it, show it, long as I can grow it, my hair. I let it fly in the breeze and get caught in.
You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Three houses of worship will highlight the Preservation Resource Center's fall tour of stained glass art in sacred places. Mosaics of bright colors will create a dramatic backdrop as presentations focus on art and architecture in each religious house. Joining me to talk about the upcoming bus tour is PRC spokeswoman Pam Tanner. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane. It's nice to be here.
Tell me, how did stained glass art become associated with sacred places?
I think it actually started in sacred places, especially during the medieval times. Stained glass has been around for thousands of years, But during the medieval times, when the Gothic churches were being built, they had to fill up the spaces they were opening up in the walls. So they added the windows, and why not tell a story at the same time?
What is it that we find so attractive about this colored glass?
I think color in particular is attractive to us. We all like to have our favorite color. When you sit in a church and you have that wonderful glowing feeling of the glowing glass, the sun shining through and touching you, sometimes you feel a peace. Sometimes you feel inspired. I think that's why.
Now, you mentioned that they wanted to tell a story with the glass. Does the stained glass actually tell a story?
It depends on which church you go to. Here in New Orleans, we have a wealth of churches and variety of religious congregations. At St. Patrick, the windows were mainly chosen by the patrons who were paying for the windows. St. Patrick has more traditional with pictorial windows. For example, there's a wonderful St. Patrick window. Brilliant green, holding the shamrock. I mean, St. Patrick is just gorgeous. Next to him is Our Lady of the United States or the Americas with Indians and the Capitol Dome and one thing after another. Another church might have, say, St. Charles Avenue Presbyterian, has a chapel, which we will visit, that has the creation as its theme. So all the windows are dealing with the creation as portrayed in the Bible in words, and it's translated to glass art and pictures. I was stunned. St. Charles Avenue Presbyterian will have the artist who designed and fabricated the windows. His name is Steve Wilson, and he's from Baton Rouge. So we're looking forward to his talk about the new chapel windows.
Now, you mentioned St. Patrick's. You mentioned St. Charles Presbyterian Church. There are three houses of worship. What is the third one that is on the tour?
The third one is Temple Sinai, which is the oldest Reform congregation in Louisiana. And they tell me it's the largest Jewish congregation in the state. So their windows are not pictorial in the sense of having people featured, because that's not allowed. They are more symbols like the Torah, hands, special icons that the Jewish community feels particularly close to.
And how did you go about choosing these three specific houses of worship?
Oh, my goodness. We've been at this for 25 years now. As a matter of fact, next spring will be our 25th year. And a group of us gather around a dining room table, and we talk about, you know, where we want to go next. And sometimes it's a matter of, well, I heard that there's a great church across here, and I want to go there, and why don't we do this? We eventually get down to three or four churches. We've been upriver to Donaldsonville. We've been to Baton Rouge. We've been across the lake to the North Shore. And, of course, we've been to, I'd say, more than 50 churches here in the greater New Orleans area. But we always try to make it a variety of stained glass, a variety of congregations, and a variety of styles, art styles.
What is the state of the stained glass in the city?
Post-Katrina, we've lost some. Due to deterioration, we've lost some due to the closing of the churches, the flooding created big problems post-Katrina with the mold and everything like that. So most congregations have come back.
With the losses that we have in the stained glass, how are we preserving the glass?
So to preserve a stained glass window, a lot of times it means removing the window from the frame, re-letting the window, in other words, putting new lead pieces around each little piece of glass, and then reinstalling it so that it will hold up for another 25, 50, 100 years.
So it can be done. We can preserve what we have and restore what's being lost.
Mm-hmm. Now, glass, depending on the mixture of the soda ash and silica that was used, glass can deteriorate from acid rain and things like that. But most glass windows are preserved now with outside plexiglass or outside safety glass.
What do you think will be most memorable for people who take the tour this year?
Oh, there's so much. At St. Patrick's, I think the dome, the glass in the dome, which is absolutely gorgeous. I'm not going to say anything more about that. Then at Temple Sinai, you have such a wealth of beautiful glass there. And then the Pièce de Résistance, St. Charles Avenue Presbyterian, where you've got that gorgeous chapel, brand new glass, and the artist himself.
Pam, thanks so much for stopping by.
You're welcome, Diane. Thank you for having me.
Pam Tanner with the Preservation Resource Center. The PRC's Fall Stained Glass Tour, Bright and Beautiful, takes place on Sunday. The bus tour begins at 2 p.m. at the St. Charles Presbyterian Church at the corner of State Street and St. Charles Avenue and will end there at 5 p.m. with a reception to follow. Binoculars are recommended. This is a ticketed event. More info at prcno.org. Voices on the Arts is a partnership with NOLA V and WWNO, featuring eight new leaders of the city's foremost cultural organizations. New Orleans arts institutions have perhaps never gone through this kind of major change all at once. We're hearing from these new executives on what they bring to New Orleans, how they are embracing our culture, and their plans for the future. Today, we hear from the man at the helm of the Contemporary Arts Center.
My name is Neil Barclay, and I'm the executive director of the Contemporary Arts Center in New Orleans. I've spent a lot of time in Central America, in South America, in the Caribbean, and had I come to New Orleans earlier in my life, I probably would have said, well, I'll just stay here. And, you know, I've lived in a number of different places now. I was in Austin as Austin just began to become the boom town that it's become, right? A lot of people say, yeah, things are really starting to take off. They're really different here, et cetera. But for somebody who's lived through all of those transitions in other cities, it's so clear that it's just a matter of time before New Orleans really begins to take its rightful place in my mind as one of the great cities of the U.S. I guess I never have been that person who's thought about what we don't have. I really tend to concentrate on what we do have, right, as an asset, whether it be financial or physical assets. You know, whatever kind of assets, human assets that we have a great staff. And so we have an important part of our mission that's around making sure that the artists that live and work here are better off because we're here. And that can be everything from, of course, presenting some of these artists, and we will reinaugurate what used to be called NOLA Now. It will have a new name, but it will be a exhibition that focuses every year on New Orleans-based artists, right? On the performance side, you know, we have a small 220-seat theater, but we have this incredible warehouse space, which performance installation is an important part of what is being done now in contemporary art as we kind of erase barriers between art forms. So a space like that is an ideal laboratory for people who are really working in the performing arts, work that is influenced by theater and music practices, by dance and everything in between. I want to see more and different kinds of people come through the door. My goal would be when somebody comes to New Orleans, I'd say, you know, I've got to go by and see that CAC. I've been hearing so much about it, and I want to go by there, and I want to see what that's about. But also for the CAC, interestingly enough, we have a huge opportunity around just getting more people through the door to become members. Our base membership for artists is something like $25. If more people became members, that would be a great thing, right? Here's the secret about fundraising. As you look at the research and the trend data on how people raise money, it's great to get the big gifts. But guess what? The people that survive the longest are the people that have the most number of gifts, not the largest gifts. Because people who give a lot at some point, they may at some point not be able to do that or continue to give at that level. So my strategy is really about increasing the number of people who are giving something.
More about Neil Barclay's plans for the Contemporary Arts Center at WWNO.org or NOLAV.com. And we have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. WYES-TV is presenting A Warehouse on Chapultepec, a documentary exploring the 1970s musical Landmark and the impact it had on the fans who flocked there and the musicians who played on its stage. The documentary airs Thursday at 7 p.m. More information at WYES.org. And if you're in the mood for a road trip, the Fountain Blue High School Crimson Band Booster Club is presenting The Drifters in concert Tuesday evening, November 12th at 7:30 p.m. at the Fountain Blue High School Auditorium in Mandeville. More information at fhscrimsonband.com. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.